Morning, everyone. I enjoyed the song service, and I appreciate Brother Kenny's very humble prayer. And I appreciate the time of each of you this morning coming out with us to worship the Lord. And again, as I usually say, we together have an audience of one, and let us look to Him for all our guidance and direction. I think we're okay on the schedule today. I checked, and Cowboys don't play till 3 o'clock today. An opening game, so I think we're okay. But I would ask you if the Lord would bless us today, give Him all the credit for anything any good that might come out of this. I'm in the Old Testament today. It's the last book of the Old Testament, the book of Malachi. Malachi was the last prophet of the Old Testament. After his prophecy, we had about 400 years of silence between the Old Testament and the New Testament. So being the last prophet, prophecy means you're predicting the future. You're not predicting, you are foretelling what the future will be. So being the last prophet, whatever he foretells about the future is going to take place in the New Testament. So he is foretelling what's going to take place. He's about 400 years away from the New Testament. I want one verse I want to look at here, and that's Malachi chapter 3, verse 1. It's easy to find. Find the book of Matthew in the New Testament and go backwards. And the first book you come to will be Malachi. Malachi chapter 3, verse 1. Behold, I will send my messenger. This is the Lord talking through Malachi. Behold, I will send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way before me. And the Lord, whom ye seek, shall suddenly come to his temple, even the messenger of the covenant, whom ye delight in. Behold, he shall come, saith the Lord of hosts. We've got the foretelling of what's coming here. And Malachi being the last prophet, any of his prophecies not going to happen in the Old Testament. Being the last prophet, he's going to, any prophecy he gives clearly is going forward into the New Testament. But he's, if you'll notice, he says he's going to send a messenger. But if you'll look carefully, he talks about two messengers. Behold, I will send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way before me. As this is the Lord talking, so he's going to send a messenger that's going to prepare the way for the Lord. And if you notice that, it's what's important about the King James Version is it's a translation. It's not really a version. It's a translation. They took the old Hebrew scripts in the Old Testament, the Greek scripts in the New Testament, and translated them word for word. They didn't try to interpret them. They just translated, picked the translations that worked, including the punctuation. The punctuation, if you'll look, it says, Behold, I will send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way before me. And then there's a colon. And what does a colon mean in grammatical terms? It means what comes after the colon is essentially equal to what's before the colon. It's equal to explain it. I may say I have 3 points today, colon, 1, 2, and 3, and I'll list them. But, you know, it's the 3 points that I talk about here, I just got through saying about. So the two sides are basically equal. So he said, he shall prepare the way before me. Now after that he defines me. And the Lord whom ye seek shall suddenly come to his temple, even the messenger of the covenant. Even means he is the messenger of the covenant. The same one we're talking about here, same person. The Lord whom ye seek shall suddenly come to his temple, even the messenger of the covenant. So there's a second messenger. One is the messenger of mine that's going to come prepare the way. And then secondly, there's a messenger of the covenant whom ye delight in. Behold, he shall come, saith the Lord. What I want to look at here in just a moment is, number one, who are these two messengers? One is the messenger that prepares the way before the Lord. And the other one is the Lord who brings, is the messenger of the covenant. And also, the second question, first is who the two messengers are. It says he suddenly comes to his temple. Now, suddenly doesn't mean like we think at all times. It doesn't mean hastily. In this case, suddenly means unexpectedly. And that's true. You know, I mean, I could be sitting here and suddenly I look up and I see somebody that's been there a long time. That didn't mean they came in hastily, but unexpectedly I saw them and wasn't expecting to see them. So, number one, the Lord shall come to His temple. I want to look at the temple. If He's coming to His temple, what temple are we talking about? And even the messenger of the covenant, and it shall come suddenly. So we've got two messengers, we've got a temple, and we've got Him coming suddenly into His temple. Now, what is He talking about, the temple? Which temple is He talking about? Before we can decide that, we need to go back and look and think a minute here about what temples we have. We know, where's the temple today? There's 35 acres over there in Jerusalem up on this mount. Is the temple there? There's no temple there, is there? No temple there. That's about 35 acres. It's the most fought over, bloodiest piece of ground, I believe, in the world. Right now in there, there's a Muslim mosque that's been there. It's been there for several hundred years. Last temple was destroyed, we know, in 70 A.D. Let's backtrack a little bit and let's go back. When the Lord says, I want to come down and dwell with my people, we've got to go back into Exodus. I believe it's chapter 25, 26. When the Lord tells Moses, I want you to build me a tabernacle, gives him all the instructions and those are detailed and there's lots of good sermons there, but he says, this will be the place that I will come down and dwell with my people. I want a dwelling place on earth. So they build a tabernacle to fit that means. And the Lord says, the center of the worship service, well, I'll come down. The center of that is going to be the Ark of the Covenant. And that ark has, you know, it was a big box, a big golden box, very elaborate, very beautiful. Had box, and inside that box were several things, but primarily it was the tables of the Ten Commandments, the law. That's how the law got started, right there was the Lord's Ten Commandments. Those are inside that golden box. The box had a lid on it called the mercy seat. And that's where the priest would go back in the back part of that tabernacle, and he would kill a lamb, a sheep, a goat, a ram, whatever, a bull, and he would take that blood and he would sprinkle it on that mercy seat, on that seat. And that would be seek the forgiveness of sins. We had to kill, takes a death to kill and blood, sprinkle on that mercy seat, and then the Lord would forgive the people's sins for 1 year. We know that, you know, Christ, when He died, then He eliminated our sins forever. But back then, that was the center of the worship, was that Ark of the Covenant inside the tabernacle. Now, we rocked along here, you know, and the nation of Israel. I'm skipping a lot here, a lot of good stuff in this, but for my purposes, we'll skip a time here, and David was there. David came and conquered the land after when he was born. They had the people chose Saul as their first king, and the Lord, that wasn't his choice. And we know that David became king later, and he united all the fighting tribes, 12 tribes of Israel, the families were all fighting. He united them behind him, so he represented the entire nation as king. He said, let's move the tabernacle to Jerusalem, and he moved it to Jerusalem and moved the Ark of the Covenant. That was a big ceremony. It's pretty interesting. And he just says, you know, but for 400 years since Moses built his tabernacle, we've been worshiping the Lord in this cloth-type tabernacle, this tent. We need to fix that. We need to build the Lord a permanent home. And the Lord came down and said, yes, I'd like to have a permanent place. Everybody else has permanent places. David, you built yourself a nice temple and a nice house. I don't have a palace. I don't have a permanent place to reside and dwell among my people. He says, but David, you can't build it. You got blood on your hands. You've defeated all the enemies, and I'm not going to let you build it, but I'm going to let your son build it. So Solomon comes along. When he comes along, David gathered up all the materials. David said, okay, I can't build it. But he started saving up all the gold and silver he can. He tried to make deals to help out Solomon. When Solomon became king then, he started to work building this temple. We know he got this great, he made a deal with the king of Lebanon and got these great, renowned cedars of Lebanon, these huge cedar trees that he came and built a temple out of on the inside, the cedars of Lebanon. We all know the qualities of cedar. He built everything with quality products. Anybody's had a cedar chest to keep the bugs out, whatever it is, termites and the worms and all that stuff, they won't come in cedar because it has that smell, that quality to the wood that the bugs don't bother it. So we built the temple out of these wonderful cedars, and then on the inside he overlaid everything with gold. On the outside he built the stones and built stones around it. So, I mean, it was a fantastic temple, grandeur, one of the wonders of the world at that time. And they brought in then, Solomon brought in the Ark of the Covenant. It's the centerpiece of the worship service. It's where the Lord says, I will come and dwell above that Ark of the Covenant, between those cherubims, which I can never pronounce, right on top of the mercy seat. I'll come and I'll bring my glory with me. And we know when Solomon dedicated that temple and dedicated it with the Ark of the Covenant behind those curtains, back in that most holy part, the Lord came down and He made His presence known. Back during the days of the tabernacle and in the temple, when the Lord was there, you knew it because His glory filled the tabernacle, filled the temple. In the tabernacle, you could see fire and smoke above that most holy place where the Ark of the Covenant was. And in the temple, that's where above the Ark of the Covenant, that's where the Lord came down and made His presence, and He dwelt among His people. We know then, you can skip to the book of Jeremiah, David reigned and Solomon reigned, and after Solomon, the nation split up. They started fighting again, split up into 10 tribes on the north and 2 tribes on the south that included Jerusalem. The 10 tribes on the north got defeated by the Assyrians about 740 B.C. The bottom tribes, Judah and Benjamin, they had Jerusalem, still had the temple there. They still worshiped, but they weren't following the Lord. And we know that they were defeated by the Babylonians about 586 B.C., about 150 years after the northern tribes got overwhelmed and got taken. Then the southern tribes, Judah, got invaded by Babylonia. The Babylonians came and invaded Jerusalem, took a lot of the people with them back to Babylon, and they destroyed the temple. You can read that in Jeremiah, the end of that, I believe it's in the 31st chapter, and also the end, like 52. He talks about the destruction of Jerusalem and the destruction of the temple. You know, now this is, we're talking several hundred years before Malachi's prophecy. But the temple that Solomon built was destroyed, and the Ark of the Covenant disappeared. I made a joke out of this before. We don't know where it is. Nobody knows except Indiana Jones. So nobody knows where that Ark went. It disappeared. But that was the centerpiece of the worship service. When the Lord came down, He always came down above that Ark of the Covenant and the mercy seat. That's where He came down. Well, that disappeared, and the temple was destroyed. So Malachi, 150 years later, and he's projecting into the future and said the Lord's going to come to His temple. The Lord came to the temple of Solomon, tabernacle of Solomon, but he was not talking about that temple. That temple's gone, and he's speaking in the future. So Solomon's temple is not the temple that Malachi is talking about here. You know, we get to Malachi after the Babylonians came and took all the people back, captured, took them all back and kept them. You can go read Ezekiel and Daniel. Those are things that took place during that time of captivity. But Isaiah, in the last part of Isaiah 44 and the first part of Isaiah 45, Isaiah predicted that there will be a Persian rise up named Cyrus. And Cyrus then he goes on and predicts he's a kind of a chosen person of God. Well, if you get out into natural history that we know of, and it's also covered in the first chapter of Ezra and Nehemiah, I'm going to talk about here in a second. But Ezra says Cyrus came to power. Cyrus was a Persian. He came and overtook and overthrew the Babylonians. So he overtook the Babylonians. And in his first year, Ezra chapter 1 verse 1 says, in his first year, he said, we need to let the Jews go back to Jerusalem. He said, we're going to let them go back and we're going to send them back. So he was prophesied even by Isaiah. And Ezra confirms it, that the Jews were allowed to go back. And he says, not only that, I'm going to let you rebuild your temple. So he sent money with him. He sent money and resources. Didn't have as much as Solomon did, but he sent all his money and resources back with the Jews, and they started rebuilding the temple, rebuilt the temple and the walls. That's covered in Ezra and Nehemiah, if you want to go read that. Pretty interesting. But we know that it was a problem rebuilding that temple. Number one, they didn't have enough money. They didn't have money like Solomon did. And the Jewish man that took the lead was Zerubbabel. I think I got that one right. Zerubbabel. He took charge of it, building the temple. And he got the temple built. And then they were going out in the book of Nehemiah. They were trying to build the walls. And they had trouble from the Samaritans coming down and attacking them. That's where the phrase comes. They worked with one hand and kept a weapon beside them. It's the sword and the trowel. They had a trowel to build the wall. And then they always had a sword or a shield or weapon to fight off the people coming. But they built that wall around Jerusalem in something like 55 days. So they rebuilt it, and it's called Zerubbabel's temple. He was the Jewish, I guess he was a general contractor, I might think of him like that. He built that temple, and that became Zerubbabel's temple, and that's temple number two. But we don't have any evidence in the Bible that the Lord ever came down and visited that temple. No evidence whatsoever. Ark of the Covenant's gone. Remember, it was gone when the Babylonians took it and it disappeared. We don't know whether they took it, or we don't know whether the priests buried it and then were killed or destroyed. We don't know. Lots of legends. You can go on Google it online, and lots of things down in Ethiopia. It's in the tunnels underneath. Nobody knows. But Zerubbabel's temple, the temple number two, that the Persians let them go back and build, never had the Ark of the Covenant in it. That's the heartbeat of the worship service to these Jewish people. They didn't ever have it. And Zerubbabel's temple was finished 50 years after they got kicked out. Babylon took them. Cyrus came to power 50 years later, and he let them go back. A lot of them that came as children were now getting to go back as adults and see this temple rebuilt, Zerubbabel's temple, when they worshipped in it. But it was plain. It wasn't anywhere elaborate as like Solomon's was. They continued worshiping that way, but in the meantime, and right at the end, after Zerubbabel's temple is built, that's when Malachi wrote his prophecy. So when he's writing this prophecy, Zerubbabel's temple is right over there in Jerusalem with him. We got 400 years of silence now until we get to the New Testament after Malachi. During that 400 years, it's silent in the Bible, but it's not silent in world events. The Persians had taken over the Babylonians. In a short period of time, the Greeks overthrew the Persians. The Greeks, led by a guy named Alexander the Great. You've heard of him. A city is named Alexandria. Is named after him. Alexander the Great overthrew the Persians. Alexander the Great installed a man. I can't pronounce his name. It's in history. But he installed a man at Jerusalem. He was unhappy with the Jews, and he said, keep them calm. This guy was real mean and real bitter, and about 125 B.C., the Jews overthrew him and threw him out of the temple that they had. That was the Jewish leader was named Jewish Maccabeus. You've never heard of Maccabeans. He overthrew him on Christmas Day. It wasn't Christmas Day then, but about December 25th of 125 B.C. The Jews celebrate that day to this day. It's a day of dedication. They rededicated the temple. They call it Hanukkah. When they separate Happy Hanukkah right there at Christmas, the same time we celebrate Christmas, they're celebrating that time when they threw this evil Greek leader out. Later on, in about 70 B.C., the Romans came and overthrew the Greeks, and they took over the Holy Land then. The Romans were led by the great Pompey, King Pompey. King Pompey came, and you know he was building the Roman Empire. He said, we've got to have somebody in charge of Judea. So he said, I don't want to put a Jewish person in charge of Judea. I want somebody who they respond to. So he found an Edomite. Remember David and Joshua and all of them had defeated the Edomites? He found an Edomite, rich man, and elevated him up to king. His name was Herod, Herod the Great. And he put Herod king of Judea. Well, Herod goes, you know, I remember all these Jews talk about how great King David was and Solomon was and had this great temple. Herod had an ego, huge ego. He wanted to be a king like Solomon was. So he says, I'll rebuild your temple for you. And he dedicated a ton of money. He wanted to be king. He took Zerubbabel's temple, that plain temple there, and he added on to it. I mean, he almost rebuilt an entire new... It'd be the greatest remodeling job you've ever seen. He built towers and courtyards and Solomon's porch, and he really added to it and expanded it. He made another great temple. It wasn't as great as Solomon's, but at that time, again, it was considered one of the great wonders of the world. And this became known as Herod's Temple. It's really an expansion and a remodeling of Zerubbabel's temple. That's the temple that was built by Herod in 63-60 B.C., and it was there in place at the time of Christ. Herod was a young man, 60 years later, when Christ came along, and Herod the king was then still there, and he was great ego, wanted to be king. He heard there was a new king in town. These wise men told him, you know, and of course he sent them to go kill him. That's the temple that was there at the time of Christ. So we had Solomon's temple, which was destroyed. We had Zerubbabel's temple, which was in place when Malachi wrote it. But Zerubbabel's temple did not have the Ark of the Covenant. And there's no evidence that the Lord ever came down. His Ark was gone. And then we had Herod's temple, and they had that most holy place, but it was empty. Still, no Ark of the Covenant's inside there. No place to worship. So what temple is it that Malachi is talking about. He's going to come back and worship. He's going to come suddenly into his temple. That's the temple that's in place when Christ comes along. Let me go back to my text now. Let's go through these questions that I said we had to ask. Behold, I will send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way before me. Well, you know, I think you know the second messenger of the covenant. You know who that's going to be. That's going to be Christ, and we'll talk on that in a second. But who's the messenger that's sent to prepare the way for Christ? John the Baptist. John the Baptist is known for that. Let's go over here to the... You don't have to go. You'll know these. And so go over here to the book of Mark. And Mark begins, the beginning of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God, as it is written in the prophets, Behold, I send my messenger before thy face, which shall prepare the way before thee. Talking about John the Baptist. And Mark here is quoting the prophets, quoting from Malachi that we just read. And then he goes on and says, but he up here in verse 2, he used prophets, plural, two prophets. He also then goes on and quotes Isaiah chapter 40 when he says, The voice of one crying in the wilderness, Prepare ye the way of the Lord, make his path straight. And then he goes on and said, John did baptize in the wilderness. He wore these lawn cloths. He was clearly the messenger that Mark was pointing back to. This is the messenger of Malachi and also Isaiah chapter 40. You can go read that. Let's go on also over here to Luke. Luke chapter 3 verse 4. As it is written in the book of the words of Isaiah the prophet, saying, The voice of one which cried in the wilderness. Mark also quoted that. Prepare you the way to make the Lord his path straight. And he goes on and says in this verse 5, according from Isaiah, Every valley shall be filled, and every mountain hill shall be brought low, and the crooked shall be made straight, and the rough ways shall be made smooth. And all flesh shall be see the salvation of the Lord. Now, says every mountain's going to be brought down, and every valley's going to be raised up. Things that are smooth are going to be rough, and things that are rough are going to be smooth. Well, John the Baptist didn't have a front-end loader, did he? He didn't have a bulldozer. How are he going to make mountains low and get valleys raised up, level everything out? But this is what we call figuratively speaking. He's not talking literally. Isaiah was using a little poetic license here. Isaiah was using a little poetic license here when he says, we're going to level all the mountains, raise all the valleys. He's talking about this is what John the Baptist, the message he's going to bring. He was talking about the Jewish leadership, the high priest. They had all these high and mighty goals and all these rules that they had in place. They built themselves up and pushed down the sinners and the publicans, pushed them down. And that's what he's talking about. Those high mountains which the Jews had. Everybody that's got a big ego is going to be brought down. Those people that are humble and abased are going to be brought up. That's what the coming with Christ was going to do. And that's what John the Baptist said, start preparing the way for this guy that's going to make us all equal. Everybody with an ego is coming down. Everybody with humility is going to be raised up. Everybody that's rough is going to be made smooth. He's talking about publicans and sinners. Those are people the priests wouldn't have anything to do with. He's leveling us all out right here. And that's what he's talking about when he prophesies that. Go over here real quickly even to John now. Again, we're talking about the messenger that was sent to prepare the way. John chapter 1 verse 6. And there was a man sent from God whose name was John. This is John the Baptist. The same came for a witness, to bear witness of the light, that all men through him might believe. He was not that light, but was sent to bear witness of that light. John the Baptist was not the light. Christ was the light. John the Baptist was sent to bear witness of that light. That's who Malachi is talking about over there. So that's the first messenger. Behold, I will send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way before me. You got the Godhead speaking here. This is Christ speaking through the Godhead at that time. But he's saying, prepare the way before me. And then the colon, now the Lord's talking about himself. And the Lord whom you seek shall suddenly come to his temple, even the messenger of the covenant. Well, here's the second messenger, the messenger of the covenant. Who's the messenger of the covenant? Well, real quickly, it's throughout the New Testament, but go read Hebrews chapter 7, 8, and 9. The messenger of the covenant was Jesus Christ. He's the mediator of the covenant. He's the new covenant. He's changed it from the covenant, the law, into the covenant of grace. And Jesus brought that. He was the mediator of it. He was the messenger of it. He brought it. We're now under the law of grace. Thank goodness. We're not under that old law anymore. So that's the two messengers. We backed up and we got the two messengers now. First one is John the Baptist, who's going to come and prepare the way. But the Lord, who's the messenger of the covenant, he's going to come too. And that's Christ. So that's who he's prophesying here. Number one, John the Baptist. And number two, Jesus Christ. But then he says, the Lord whom you seek shall suddenly come to his temple. What temple is he talking about? Is he talking about the original temple, Solomon's temple? No, it's destroyed before Malachi even reads it. And the Ark of the Covenant is gone out of it because it was destroyed by the Babylonians, or it was disappeared at the time they came. Is it Zerubbabel's temple? Is that the Lord's temple? It says this, he shall come to his temple. Lord, clearly Solomon's temple was his temple because he said, and the tabernacle was because he said, I'm going to come and dwell with my people there. Lord says, this is his temple where he has a precedent of saying, I'm going to come and dwell with my people. Was it Zerubbabel's temple? Zerubbabel was the temple that man built. They decided, Cyrus ordered and let them build it. But there's no evidence the Ark of the Covenant was ever there. It clearly wasn't. And there's no evidence that the Lord ever came down. Well, how about that leaves us with Herod's temple, the third temple that was built. Is that the temple that Malachi is talking about? Herod's temple. If you go into the book of Luke, in the book of Luke, we know in the second chapter, I won't go there, but second chapter there, we know that after Christ was born out in Bethlehem, his mother, they had him circumcised, and apparently that was done in Bethlehem on the eighth day, according to the law. But it says then, at the time of her purification, which was about 40 days, 6 weeks long in there, after she'd had a child, she had to get her. They had to come and be clean, and so she came back to the temple to do that, and that's in the second chapter. She brought baby Jesus to the temple, Herod's temple. Now he came and he was a baby, swaddling clothes. We know that's when the people saw him there. One man that says, you know, I was told I would not die until I could actually lay my eyes on the Christ. That's what happened during that time. She came back and she dedicated two doves and dedicated Christ to the Lord at the temple. Did the Jewish priests know that was going on? Just a Jewish couple comes in the temple. A lot of people did. They dedicated to. Came in baby's clothing. Says he will suddenly come into the temple. That means unexpectedly. Well, clearly, were the Jews expecting their king to be a baby wrapped in swaddling clothes, dirty clothes, rags and stuff? Nah, not likely. What did the Jews expect at the time? What did the Jewish leadership expect? Their Christ was going to be a warrior. He was going to come and lead and put away on all their enemies. He was going to come and lead them into a new kingdom. He was going to be the new king like David and Solomon were. He was going to defeat all their enemies. Would it be unexpected for their king to come in the door being held by a mother wrapped in swaddling clothes, probably sleep half the time? Clearly, that child came in unexpectedly, didn't it? That child came in unexpectedly. So Jesus came to Herod's temple clearly in an unexpected manner. They were not expecting that at all. Does that make Herod's temple the temple that we're talking about here? Let's go back to the time 2 Samuel when the Lord appeared to David and said, David, 2 Samuel chapter 7. He said, David, I'm not going to let you build the temple. It's going to be built by your seed. 2 Samuel 7 verse 12. It says, Lord talking, it says, speaking through Nathan the prophet, and when thy days be fulfilled, and thou shalt sleep with thy fathers, David, after you're dead, I will set up thy seed after thee, which shall proceed out of thy bowels, and I will establish his kingdom. He shall build a house for my name. He's going to build a temple for my name. And I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever. That's what the Lord told David back then when he was predicting, when the Lord's saying, David, I'm not going to let you up, but I'm going to have a temple built, and it's going to live forever, and it's going to be the house where he's going to dwell with his people forever. Did Solomon's temple last forever? No. And that happened before Malachi, so we know it couldn't be him. Zerubbabel's temple, did it last forever? No. Herod's temple, did it last forever? It was destroyed by the Romans in 70 A.D. What temple is Malachi talking about that the Lord will come back to suddenly. If it's Herod's temple, go back with me over there. I remember the Lord went through twice early on in John, and then later on, it's in Matthew, I believe, where he came in and he was unhappy with the temple because they were doing business. Had businessmen in there making a profit out of the temple, money changers. You know, if I wanted to go in, I came from far off and I didn't have time to bring a sheep or a goat or a dove that I had to go and make my sacrifice. I could go in and buy it. I could trade my money from up north for my exchange for south, like you do when you go to another country and exchange their money. But the Lord came in and saw that money changers. He overturned the tables and got mad, and he said, this is a den of thieves. Didn't like it at all. When he cleansed the temple, the Jewish leadership got mad at him, and he got in a conversation with them. In 2 John, verse 19, Jesus said to them, destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up. That was Herod's temple he was talking about. If you destroy this temple, that's who the Jewish people thought he was talking about. Jewish leadership, he said, if you destroy the temple, I'll raise it back in 3 days. But you know, the New Testament here tells us he wasn't talking about Herod's temple. Then said the Jews, it took us 46 years, talking about Zerubbabel's temple and Herod's temple. It took us 46 years to build this temple, and you're going to raise it back up in 3 days? Verse 21, but he spoke of the temple of his body. He said, I'm not talking about Herod's temple. If you go over here and back with me to Matthew, when again Jesus is fighting with the Jewish, Matthew chapter 23, next last verse, verse 38, Jesus tells the Jewish leadership, behold, your house is left unto you desolate. Your temple is left unto you desolate. Your house. Both the Lord and both Malachi said it'll be his temple that he'll come back to. Jesus says, Herod's temple, that's your house. And it's going to be left desolate. Doesn't have the Ark of the Covenant in it. You've been worshiping in it. And you've been making it, using it to make money off people. That's your house, and it's going to be desolate. So Jesus has himself said, it's not Herod's temple. One Jerusalem is not Herod's temple. They didn't have the Ark of the Covenant. What temple is it that Malachi was telling us to? Go over here to 1 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians chapter 3. Verse 16. Apostle Paul is telling us, know ye not that ye are the temple of God, and that the Spirit of God dwelleth in you? You're the temple of God. God is dwelling inside you. He's chosen you to make his place to dwell among the people. If any man defile the temple of God, let him... him God shall destroy, for the temple of God is holy, which temple ye are. Go with me over 3 chapters. 1 Corinthians chapter 6. Apostle Paul tells us again, chapter 6, verse 19. What? Know ye not that your body is the temple of the Holy Ghost, which is in you, which ye have of God, and ye are not your own? For ye are bought with a price, therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. The temple he's talking about is you. He said he was a messenger of the new covenant, and he's going to return to his temple suddenly. How does he return to it suddenly? Go read the 3rd chapter of John about being born again. He said, you don't know when the Spirit is coming like the wind. You don't know when it's coming, when it's going. It comes unexpectedly. Did it come unexpectedly to John the Baptist? Came while he's still in his mother's womb. I'd say that was unexpectedly. How about the Apostle Paul? Struck him down on the road to Damascus when he was going out to arrest people worshiping Christ. Struck him down. It came to him unexpectedly, didn't it? He came in unexpectedly, and he came to his temple. But, you know, we don't have a good worship service without the Ark of the Covenant there, without the law being in that Ark of the Covenant, without the mercy seat. Go read Hebrews chapter 8, verse 10. The Lord says, I will put my law. The law was what was in the Ark of the Covenant, the Ten Commandments. I will put my law into their minds and into their hearts. You've got it inside you. That law that was in the Ark of the Covenant is inside you, and the Lord puts it there. Christ has come, as we're told. Christ has come to dwell in you. He's the mercy seat. It's on Him that blood was shed for the mercy seat for you. We don't do it like we did under the Old Testament, because Christ died for you and spread His blood for you. He's inside you. The Ark of the Covenant is here. Everything you need to worship is right here, into your heart and into your mind. That's where the temple is, and that's the forever temple. The Lord told David, I'm going to build him a house that'll last forever. The temple that He puts inside you is there. The Lord is inside you. You are His temple. I'm afraid to say I'm not treating my temple like I ought to. I'm not taking care of it like I ought to. I'm not helping it and making it grow. And sometimes I've damaged it physically. But I want each one of us to say, the Lord has come and put Himself in you. You're the center of His worship service. You are. We ought to be here every time the church doors open. We ought to be reading our Bible. We ought to be studying. We ought to be praying to Him. Because you're the center of His worship service. You're the temple. The temple's inside you. The Ark of the Covenant's inside you. Christ is inside you. He's the center of our worship service. He couldn't make it any more personal for you than He does. He has put Himself there. He's there, and that's where the temple is. That's what Malachi was talking to us about here. The Lord shall suddenly return to His temple. You know He's there when He lets you know He's there, and that comes when you're born again. Not of your choice. It wouldn't be suddenly. If I could plan out when I was going to be born again, it wouldn't be suddenly, would it? That's what Malachi tells us. The Lord has put Himself in you. We need to remember that. We need to treat our temple as if it's Solomon's temple. We ought to dedicate it. We ought to worship it like that. And we ought to thank the Lord for giving us that access immediately. Used to, you had to access Him in Solomon's temple, you know, through the priest. You didn't get to go see God personally. Well, God says, you can see Me personally now. This is the temple that lasts forever, and it's on you. Y'all have been very kind to me with your attention, and my prayer is that the Lord will richly bless you.